versus Commonwealth, Mr. Embry and Mr. Stollert. Mr. Embry, do you wish to reserve any rebuttal time?
Judge, I'll reserve 5 minutes. I don't know if I'll need it, but I'll reserve it. When I got to court's docket this morning and I saw I had a case, two cases to argue, one for writ and this one, it occurred to me immediately that there was an interesting factual similarity. They both begin with the defendant banging on a girlfriend or ex-girlfriend's door trying to gain entry. In this case, unlike the case I argued before, I think the intent was pretty clear. Mr. Chilton was angry because while he and the victim were having a social visit, he thought she had taken some money from its clothing. The trial judge agreed with me that banging on the door, even damaging the door, wasn't when she opened the door and voluntarily let him in, that there was no breaking and entering. But the issue here on appeal is a very specific one. It was my argument that the victim was not injured. In other words, she did not suffer any injury as a result of the defendant's conduct. The evidence about what happened inside, clearly there was a confrontation and a physical confrontation. The defendant was convicted of violating 18.2-51.6 of the code, which is a fairly new statute, which prohibits applying pressure to the neck of another person, thereby impeding the blood circulation or respiration, resulting in wounding or bodily injury. In this case, the victim testified that she wasn't choked.
But she testified that she began to black out, and if she began to black out, doesn't that suggest, or isn't it evidence upon which a fact finder could logically find that there was an interruption of circulation, blood circulation?
I would argue that it's unclear exactly what she testified, what happened.
Whatever happened, isn't the real issue whether there was bodily injury?
Yes.
And while there is some evidence of unconsciousness, although I'll italicize some, the question, I mean, there's a real unanswered question as to whether a state of unconsciousness constitutes bodily injury. And isn't that really what this case is about?
Judge, I think the evidence is ambiguous about it. You know, you can infer from the record that she closed her eyes. She said, "I saw black." And then a follow-up question, her response to the Commonwealth was, "Well, I had my eyes closed," or "I closed my eyes." And whereas there might have been temporary unconsciousness, I don't think that really is plausible under this scenario. I think she just closed her eyes for a second as the defendant was, and she and the defendant were engaged in this, he pushed her down onto the couch. If the court believes that there was some temporary unconsciousness, I would argue that's not a bodily injury if she immediately came to and had no consequences.
I mean, the General Assembly clearly adopted the phrase bodily injury.
Yes.
And that phrase is not unknown.
Yes.
In the area of criminal
right.
law. We have it in malicious wounding.
Yes.
We have it in,
yes.
I think, DUI maiming, a number of areas. And it's been defined as any slight injury. I mean, a bruise can constitute a bodily injury.
Judge, I cited a couple of cases in my brief, and they're malicious wounding cases. English is the one I'll speak about. And there, the court that described bodily injury as a soft tissue injuries that require medical attention and have some residual effect. And I think that's a pretty good definition. And if you apply it here, the victim did not require medical attention. There's no evidence of residual effect. The police officer who showed up, in fact, there's a picture in the record, indicated that he did not notice anything about her appearance that indicated any type of injury. He offered her medical attention, I assume asked her if she needed to be seen by the medic or by the paramedic. And she apparently indicated no. The officer indicated that she did not ask for medical attention. So we're left with, is there any residual effect? And there's no evidence of that here. A bruise would be a residual effect, Judge. but would it require medical attention? I think it's, the cases say and, so I think it has to meet both prongs of that test. It requires medical attention and have some residual effect. And here I just don't think that evidence that Ebony Dickerson had a bodily injury is present.
We dropped a kind of a footnote addressing this in a recent case we decided, King versus Commonwealth, where it was Dawson versus Commonwealth, where we toyed with the notion that perhaps a state of unconsciousness can contextually in this statute constitute a bodily injury. But we kind of ducked it because there was no medical evidence regarding whether the loss of consciousness had any negative impact on her physical health or well-being, and because it wasn't briefed or argued.
Well,
can we reach that issue here, whether within the context of the statute and the purpose of the statute, we can conclude that the General Assembly intended unconsciousness to constitute a type of bodily injury?
Judge, I would argue if that was their intent, they should have put that in there. They could have put, if the victim loses consciousness for whatever period, that satisfies the strangulation statute and the defendant could be convicted, even though the victim came to fairly quickly, did not require medical attention, and had no residual effects. So I think the statute is not properly drawn.
Of course, on the flip side of that question, I guess if we were to construe unconsciousness as to be a type of bodily injury, then when that was applied to, say, an unlawful wounding context, if somebody got hit and was momentarily rendered unconscious, that would constitute a bodily injury for purpose of that statute.
I think I don't think there's any difference. If unconsciousness, regardless of the context or the degree, is a bodily injury, then I think it would apply in both cases. Judge, unless the court has questions, I'll reserve the rest of my time.
You have about 7 minutes remaining.
Thank you, Judge.
Mr. Stollard.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court. Craig Stollard on behalf of the Commonwealth. As the court's indicated, I think in this case, unconsciousness does constitute a bodily injury.
Let me back up just a moment. Is it your position that there's any bodily injury as that term has been defined up to this point in this case?
I mean, other than the unconsciousness?
Other than the unconsciousness.
I'm not aware of any physical injuries she suffered other than the unconsciousness issue.
So photograph. This case solely turns on whether a state of unconsciousness in the context of this statute constitutes a bodily injury.
I believe so. I think the photograph may show some redness around the neck area, but even that, I think how that got there or whatever would be ambiguous at best. I think the case does ultimately turn on whether or not being unconscious constitutes a bodily injury. And I will say that the court there's a general definition of bodily injury, but it's been phrased multiple different ways. It's been defined as detriment, hurt, loss, or impairment that could fairly be considered an injury to the human body, any bodily hurt whatsoever. Then the language that counsel cited regarding requiring medical attention, having some residual effects. All of those working together, I think, ultimately get to the same issue.
Is there any indication that the General Assembly intended the term bodily injury in the context of this statute to be construed any differently than the term is used in other statutes throughout the code?
I don't think they mean for bodily injury to have a different meaning than anywhere else, but I do think it's interesting that they chose to make strangulation a specific separate crime, because if the same nature bodily injury would be considered anywhere else, there'd be almost no need for this specific statute, because if you have a bodily injury, you've got malicious wounding.
I mean, obviously, what they intended to address, they didn't want to criminalize the mere grabbing of an individual's throat.
Right, which
they
is
wanted, or they didn't, and they didn't want to criminalize a minor disruption of blood flow or breathing. it had to be more than that.
Right, because I think the language speaks to specifically restricting blood flow or circulation of air or so forth and so on. And here, I think the natural consequence of this type of act is going to be initially someone losing consciousness, then ultimately death could result as well if it continues on much longer. And I think the fact that unconsciousness constitutes a bodily injury, that if anybody in this courtroom were to suddenly lose consciousness, it would be a situation where we would be seeking immediate medical help. Someone might possibly not call 911.
That leads me, I guess, to the follow-up of the question that we kind of dangled out there in the Dawson case. We mentioned in Dawson that there was no medical evidence. Do we need to have some type of medical evidence to allow a lay juror or a lay judge to conclude that unconsciousness in and of itself causes some type of impairment to the body?
I believe there's enough common knowledge regarding either sports injuries where someone is knocked unconscious in a sporting event or people's own personal experience. Just the idea that your body stops functioning.
But a concussion, which is loss of unconsciousness due to a blow, is a different physiological...
Different result. I mean, different means, I think, same result. Strangulation, I think, is something, again, people are going to kind of understand the concept.
I can hold my breath until I become unconscious, but I don't know whether, I mean, personally, I don't know whether that causes, I mean, a lot of people might argue it does cause a lot of loss of brain power, and that's what's happened over the years, but how do I know that as a trier of fact?
I mean, do we know the actual degree that's occurring? Probably not. Do we know that there's some bodily injury occurring when the oxygen is cut off to the brain? I think there's enough common knowledge out there that that's an establishment that doesn't need a medical expert to come in to testify. Yes, being unconscious, having your blood flow and oxygen cut off to the brain is not a healthy thing. It's going to cause some type of damage to the brain, which is why the brain stops functioning and you go unconscious. That just seems to be kind of a natural consequence of what happens based on the injuries that are occurring. I don't think a medical expert's necessary to come in every case and explain what that means.
Well, the only case that I think in which we talked about having medical testimony involves soft tissue injury. And the way this statute is written, it would seem to me that there is no soft tissue injury even envisioned necessarily. I read it as saying the impeding of blood circulation or impeding respiration is the bodily injury.
Right.
And the evidence of loss of consciousness supports the notion of bodily injury, but it's certainly not soft tissue.
I would agree.
They would say, and you would see, you know, marks around, and you'd have to look at the inside of the structure of the neck and all that.
Right.
I don't see that the case law we have on medical attention relates to anything that isn't soft tissue.
And I would agree with you, and I'm not aware of any. And again, as the court's indicated, I think the nature of what's being criminalized, the conduct of restricting the blood flow, restricting circulation, once that's done as evidenced by unconsciousness, we've got the bodily injury occurring.
What else would be strangulation? And what else would that be? I'm very curious about how strangulation was charged and found to be a basis of conviction before the statute. And
I mean, I would suggest...
I hadn't thought about looking that up.
I'm unaware of what prompted the General Assembly to create the statute, but it does seem to be a situation where there likely may have been an assault of this nature, which did not result in a conviction for a felony assault.
Ms. Talley, I want to clarify a couple of your questions. I don't want to mislead you about this in any way, but the statute criminalizes any person who, without consent, impedes the blood circulation or respiration of another by knowingly, intentionally, and unlawfully applying pressure to the neck of such person. Then it says, resulting in the wounding or bodily injury. So I need to kind of get your idea. If someone simply knowingly, intentionally, and unlawfully applies pressure to the neck of a person, impeding the blood or circulation, is that in and of itself a violation of the statute?
I'd like to say yes, but I think the way it is phrased, there has to be something resulting from the application of pressure. Okay. And in this case, with the resulting wounding or the resulting consequence is the unconsciousness or almost unconsciousness.
So I come back to where I began. Were presented with a question is whether a state of unconsciousness is a bodily injury.
Yes.
It's the degree of the impeding of the respiration is such
I think
that the body stops breathing.
And
it sounds like a bodily injury to me.
And I would also say that almost losing consciousness, assuming that's the way the court interprets the facts, you're getting close to losing consciousness, would also be evidence of a bodily injury. I don't think unconsciousness in and of itself, but I think momentary restricting the blood flow may not constitute a bodily injury. But if it's sufficiently restricted for a long enough period of time that a person is about to lose consciousness, feels they're losing consciousness, sees stars, whatever phrasing may be used in different cases, I think at that point we have clear evidence that something's going on that would constitute a bodily injury.
Of course, in this case, the evidence is pretty ambiguous. She says she saw black, but then she says, I closed my eyes. And then when she was asked, but you can't say he actually put his hands around your throat, her response, it wasn't a choking motion.
And I would tell the court that the Commonwealth's entitled to the evidence of the light most favorable to us. And I think there's a case, and I do forget the name of it. I know it's an alluding case argued in Salem. Judge Kelsey was on the panel. In that case, the police officer testified the defendant was traveling 85 miles an hour. Then a later testimony said the defendant was traveling 35 miles an hour. The argument was, well, the police officer didn't know how fast he was going. The court found that, well, we light most favorable to the Commonwealth, we can say that he was traveling 85 miles an hour and disregard the contrary testimony of 34 miles an hour, even from the same witness. So I think here the witness has testified, his hands were around my neck, I saw black, that's what happened. Later when she attempts to either clarify, change her story, whatever it may be, and she says something different, it's contrary to what she said initially, and I think the Commonwealth, because we have the conviction below, we're entitled to the light most favorable to us, which is her story that she was choked, her hands around the neck, she saw black, and if she meant to say, I closed my eyes, she could have said, I closed my eyes, she didn't. She said, I saw black.
I think the best you've got is she testified that he was holding her down at one point. He may have grabbed around my throat briefly. I think that's about as...
I mean...
And then we go into the dialogue about closing her eyes, and when she opened them, he wasn't causing any harm to me, and then it wasn't a choking motion.
I mean, obviously the record is the record. We can't go beyond the record, but this is obviously a domestic situation and just personal experience. It's people can minimize experiences when you actually get to court. But even putting that aside, giving what the record says, I think there's enough evidence here for the court to have properly found there's evidence of choking and resulting in either unconsciousness or something close enough to unconsciousness to constitute a bodily injury.
If the General Assembly wishes to criminalize choking someone to a point of unconsciousness, shouldn't we let them say that in the first instance? Shouldn't we defer to the judgment of the General Assembly if they want to say, or a state of unconsciousness, or say that for purposes of this statute, unconsciousness constitutes bodily injury? Isn't that the function of the General Assembly?
In an ideal world, possibly. I think the General Assembly is presumed to know the law when they write statutes.
Huh.
I think bodily injury is one of these terms that's been defined multiple ways. I mean, the fact it's been defined as any bodily hurt whatsoever. I think we can infer the General Assembly believed that unconsciousness would clearly fall into as a bodily injury.
I mean, obviously we don't have any real legislative history on this kind of thing.
But again, I think it would be a reasonable inference, common knowledge, however you want to say it. Unfortunately, this type of scenario isn't going to come up a lot, because if you have a situation, as the court mentioned earlier, where there's a blow to the head resulting in unconsciousness, there's likely also going to be a cutting, a wounding, bruising, bleeding, something like that to go along with the unconsciousness, so that specific issue need not be reached. This type of scenario, there may be some bruising, which I think there was in the Dawson case, and possibly some other injuries as well as part of an assault. I think the purpose of this statute is to make a felony conviction possible when somebody restricts the blood flow and circulation to the extent that causes a bodily injury being either unconsciousness or something close enough to being unconscious that clearly the body is having a negative reaction to the assault. whether it be full-blown unconsciousness or something close enough, I guess the expression you hear often is, I was seeing stars, or something along those lines, would also be close enough to being completely unconscious, that would also constitute a bodily injury. I don't think, as the court said, merely restricting it for momentarily would likely constitute it unless there's also some bruising. But even that aside, for this purposes of this statute, I think what the General Assembly is trying to criminalize is the very act that occurred in this case.
But it's a question I asked Mr. Embry earlier. Can we say for purposes of the statute, if we expand the definition of bodily injury to include momentary loss of consciousness, haven't we by implication extended that definition to all of the other code sections that use that phrase?
Yes, and I don't think that's unreasonable. Because clearly, if a bodily injury is any bodily hurt whatsoever, and all the other phrases that have been used, being assaulted to the point of becoming unconsciousness, I think clearly would constitute a bodily injury. Now, in most other circumstances, there's going to be other injuries to go along with that, because it's difficult to strike someone with enough force to be unconscious without there also being something else. But assuming that could happen, I think that would constitute a bodily injury and should be criminalized as a felony assault as well, either malicious or unlawful wounding or whatever.
But we would then pretty much obviate the need for this statute, because if the General Assembly intended unconsciousness to be a bodily injury, then a person could have been prosecuted for malicious or unlawful wounding.
Again,
prior to the enactment of the statute.
Again, in an ideal world, the General Assembly would make their intent known clearly and as concisely as possible. I understand some of these statutes aren't as clearly worded as we'd like them to be. I think they saw a problem they wanted to fix, specifically dealing with the strangulation. This is the way they chose to fix it. Could they have done it a different way? Probably. They could have said bodily injury constitutes, unconsciousness constitutes bodily injury. But they chose not to do it that way. I think they chose to do it this way. This way might be more cumbersome, but I don't think this way is inherently wrong. There's always probably a better way to do whatever the General Assembly intended to do, but I don't think that makes the way they've done it wrong or contradictory to the existing case law, or makes it pre-existing case law unworkable in other situations as a result of the statute. I think clearly what happened in this case constituted a felony assault. She was choked either to the point of unconsciousness or close enough to it, that constitutes a bodily injury. And I think this court should find that type of act, conduct should be criminalized. And I would ask this court to affirm, because the trial court's finding was not plainly wrong and there is evidence to support it.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Emery, you got a couple minutes left for rebuttal if you need them.
I think that the issue which the court is framing, that is, it does unconsciousness or being rendered temporarily unconscious constitute a bodily injury. I don't think this is the appropriate case, because I would argue that the evidence is very ambiguous as to whether she actually lost consciousness momentarily or else just closed her eyes as the defendant was pushing her down. And she indicates she didn't lose consciousness totally. She says, I saw black, but it's not clear whether that was because of a lack of oxygen or whether she simply closed her eyes in fear of what the defendant might be going to do to her. So I would argue that there isn't even evidence here that she was rendered unconscious, if the court thinks that that's an important distinction.
The context in which the assignment of error has been raised is a sufficiency issue, isn't it?
Yes, sir.
As opposed to a legal issue of how one defines the plain meaning of the statute.
Yes, sir. My argument was that there was no showing of bodily injury. And now the court's interested in whether does what happened to her constitute
right.
bodily injury. I would argue no, okay, for the reasons I've said.
All right, thank you very much.
Thank you, Judge.
We will greet counsel and then